ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
Good afternoon, Northern Territory. My name's Charles Geary, and welcome to the Country Hour. And thanks for tuning in today. Whether you're listening on the wireless or on the ABC Listen app, there's been some big rainfall totals in the Darwin Rural Area and Arnhem Region in the past 24 hours. And I'd love to hear how much you've received. Text in your rainfall totals to 0487 99 1057. Big show today. We start off by meeting the man who has been appointed as the new CEO of the National Farmers Federation.
There's a need for stability, for leadership, for strength, and for unity. And unity doesn't mean one organisation. Unity means all the organisations that represent producers in various ways working together.
And with all the hot weather about, particularly in Central Australia, we learn more about the importance of hydration and heat stress and how to tackle it while working.
We need to plan our jobs, which is foreign to most of us. We need to plan our jobs around how am I going to get rid of this heat I produce? Otherwise, I'm going to deal with heat stress.
You'll also hear from Newcastle Waters, who have been trapped in by flooding.
Yeah, our biggest concern now is the flood damage after the water fully recedes. You know, we've had a lot of trouble in previous years getting the urgent flood damage fixed. And, you know, we've been in contact with all levels of government.
We've got a great show to wrap up the week for you, so let's get into it. But to start today's show, let's talk croc eggs. As the rain continues this wet season, remote Indigenous rangers are getting out and collecting crocodile eggs. This is an important business for remote communities, selling eggs to crocodile farms. Last year, it was ruined for Jelk Rangers in Maningrida by a late wet season that was unusually hot. This killed a lot of the eggs in their nests. Jelk Ranger manager Jason Coe says it's been a slow start to the season, but more regular rainfall patterns means it's better than it was last year.
Kind of a slow start. Yeah, that early cyclone that moved through the top end, it took the weather away from the Maningrida area. So we've only just started getting decent monsoon rains. It's sort of triggering the nesting season. But we've been out recently since Christmas, and there's quite a few nests that have been pushed up and haven't laid yet. But they're definitely started nesting, and we're starting to build our number.
Last year you had like a prolonged dry spell and it killed off a lot of the nests in your area.
Yeah, we're not finding any nests that have been over that have dried out and no good anymore. So it's been a decent season as far as what we're collecting is worth our while.
How long do you collect for? Like, when does the season wrap up?
It can go anywhere up to March, depending on how late the season is and depending on the floodwaters and how long the nests last.
So essentially, the nests start popping up after the first big rain.
The first sort of build up storms with a lot of thunder and stuff, they definitely get the mothers sort of sniffing around the swamps and moving back up into the swamps. You need a certain amount of moisture in the nest to make the nest humid enough to incubate the eggs. So they're pretty switched on as far as what kind of vegetation they need and what sort of kind of right situation for the eggs to do the right thing.
And you had people out collecting today?
Yeah, we've been collecting all week. We've got rangers out this morning sussing out some other areas to see what kind of access we got. We've had some big high tides so that some areas haven't been the safest to walk into. So at the moment we've been travelling by land with buggies into the areas and then walking into the nest.
Do you see the collection for today? Was it a big day or is that ongoing?
They're still out there today. Yeah. This week we probably collected six nests. That's sort of like a total of over 200 eggs.
Yeah, right. So how many is that? 100, 200 by six is, that's a lot of nests, a lot of eggs per nest.
Yeah, we had a couple of big nests. We had one of the biggest ones I've seen for a while. It had over 50 eggs, but that sort of averages between 30 and 40.
And then once you have the eggs, for the people that don't know, where do they go?
We have an incubator. So we process the eggs, check if they're viable, we can them with a torch, and you can kind of see what kind of growth stage they're at and what kind of condition the eggs are at. And then we keep them in the incubator till they're over 30 days old. And then once they're over 30 days, they can sort of, they're sort of old enough and sort of a bit more, they can travel then. So then we'll send them to Darwin to the crocodile farms after 30 or 40 days in the incubator.
No, you're not sending sort of the hatchlings, it's before they hatch.
Yeah, we don't sort of deal with live hatchlings. We do have sometimes they hatch, but yeah, we try and get them back into Darwin as quick as we can. Yeah, so it's kind of a slow season, but it's been a good one. There hasn't been many dead nests, but yeah, and hopefully we don't get too much. Hopefully the rain's sort of steady. We don't get any big flash flooding that could spoil the nests.
Jelk Rangers manager Jason Coe speaking to Tom Robinson.
Join your local ABC team when the sun rises each weekday. Our team is out in the community. We curate the news, weather and your local rural report. Join us for breakfast right here on ABC Local Radio.
Let's have a look at some national news. The National Farmers Federation has a brand new CEO. Michael Gurin has been appointed to that role. Originally from the South Island of New Zealand, he has previously served as a chief executive of Queensland peak body Agforce for 8 years and is currently the acting CEO of New South Wales Farmers. The appointment comes after the previous CEO, Troy Williams, left the role in July of last year, only after 4 months in that position. It's been a bit of a turbulent time over at the NFF, with the New South Wales Farmers resigning their membership in April of last year, and the Victorian Farmers Federation paying hardship fees. They had also previously stated their intent to leave, though it looks like they will be sticking around. To learn more about why he took up the role, I spoke to Michael Gurin earlier this morning.
Look, I'm in my late 50s, have been incredibly proud to represent producers over the last 9 odd years and to be given the chance, and I would describe it as a privilege of representing producers across the nation in the NFF role as something I'm very humbled and honoured to have been offered. I chased it hard and I'm very lucky to have got the role. There is an incredibly urgent need for producers' voices to be better heard in decision-making corridors in the federal parliament. And what the NFF is a National Farmers Federation, a federation of members, an organisation that can unite industry and ensure we have a strong single voice on important issues like trade, like policy settings around, for example, the EPBC Act, where there's a really important conversation going on at the moment. And if you look at, for example, the economics of farming from a young person's perspective, you take the costs of buying land, the costs of capital, and you put across that the imposition of risk that goes with capital and farming, there's no profitability left in a game where we need to be attracting young people in, and where we know that if we can attract young people in, then the Australian farming system can support regional communities, support social infrastructure, support better environmental outcomes, and give us that peace and prosperity, should I say, that food security gives us.
Let's just quickly talk about something you brought up there was the need for unity and I guess and stability in a sense. Last year for the NFF, it wasn't maybe the easiest times for the organisation on that front. Let's start with the obvious. The previous CEO only lasted 4 months in the role. Seems like there's a need for stability at the top of the organisation right now. Are you going to be able to provide that?
I certainly plan to. There is a need for stability, for leadership, for strength, and for unity. And unity doesn't mean one organisation. Unity means all the organisations that represent producers in various ways working together, recognising the strength of that united voice. And yes, the NFF family has gone through some changes and challenges in the recent past. I've been a part of that as a member of the Federated Family in my role at Agforce and more lately at the New South Wales Farmers, some tough conversations going on. But being in those conversations, what I also know is you have a room full of people who are dedicated to a better future for an industry where they really understand the upside and the opportunity for Australia and getting it right, who are committed to the cause, who give incredibly of their time and their intellect across, you know, committees, various elected roles, many hundreds of senior producers giving through different organisations in the NFF, through Members Council, etc. So a dedicated group going through a reasonably tough period, but all with an interest and best outcomes for producers and understanding the opportunity and recognising the value in working together and in unity. And the conversations have been tough, but it's going to end up in the right place.
Let's just quickly talk about some of those members. New South Wales Farmers have given its notice to resign its membership. Victoria Farmers Federation are currently paying hardship fees, having previously signalled an intent to leave. Looks like they'll be sticking around. But is there some work here that needs to be done to build trust with the membership?
There's a lot of work we need to do, and as said, the last couple of years has been reasonably tough, and you've mentioned a couple of the elements of it, but I'm taking on the role because I'm really confident we can bring it back together. And like any federation or any group of organisations or indeed any community, you go through times of change, and when that change is imposed upon you, sometimes it's a challenging moment. But when you have good, strong leadership, care for country, care for industry, a recognition of what it can contribute going forward, then out of those tough conversations come a reset model fit for purpose that can really make a difference. And that's what we've been going through. We've been going through the tough part of some very strong conversations, doing it over the last couple of years, and out of that will come a richness which will enable the NFF to reset and do its job even better. And I applied for the role very confident about that, very knowledgeable about it. A lot of the senior leaders in the group, knowing everybody wants to end up in the right place. And you're right, there's some tough elements to it, but I am confident it'll come back together and agriculture and regional communities will be the beneficiaries of all of the work and all of those tough conversations and all of that commitment by many people over the last few years.
Just finally, the Northern Territory, it's a little bit away from your patches you've worked in previously. How much involvement have you had in the top end's primary industries, and what do you look to do with the top end once you enter this new role?
Look, the Northern Territory, I've never lived there, but since I've lived in Australia from 2001, I've been in and out of the Territory. I know many of the leaders. It's a unique and rich landscape. In my role at AgForce, I work closely with David Connolly and Will Evans and a number of others and NT Cattlemen's Association. It's a part of the rich tapestry of Australia. You know, Queensland, where I have worked, different to the Northern Territory, New South Wales, where I am now, different again. One of the enormous rich elements of industry in Australia more generally is its diversity, of landscapes. For example, there are 47 unique regional ecosystems around Australia, landscapes that are very different, you know, run across different climates, have different growing capacities, different commodity mixes. The Northern Territory is no different. It contributes very powerfully in its own way. And, you know, again, back to the conversation we're having about the National Farmers Federation, a federation that can bring all that richness and diversity together, focus on the big cross-cutting issues, cross-commodity, cross-geographic issues, work in a united way to make sure those policy settings are right across some of those big things. You know, an example, again, being the current conversations about the EPBC Act, has some enormously strong implications for the Northern Territory, for the grazing industry, for the regulations that sit around ensuring we look after environment, as well as growing great beef to export overseas. An example of that, the Territory, a rich part of Australia, of its history, of its heritage, of its story, and of its agricultural game.
That was Michael Guerin, the newly announced CEO of the National Farmers Federation. He begins that role as of March 23rd. Now, just a reminder, I'm keen to hear if you received any rain over the past 24 hours. Be sure to text in your numbers and your rainfall totals to 0487 991057. In the meantime, when you get busy texting those rainfall totals in, let's play a song. It's a Friday. I'm keen to relax, so let's play some Slim. That was Slim Dusty's track. Slim Dusty, apologies. Where Country Is.
Hi, my name's Erin Hart. I'm originally from Wisconsin in the USA, and we're currently standing on the Oberon Project. It's a beautiful place to work in the Tanami Desert. Gorgeous red soil, beautiful blue skies, and I'm the exploration manager for Newmont Tanami Operations, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
My name's Charles Geary. If you're just joining us today, this is the Northern Territory Country Hour. Now, the time is about 12 minutes to 1. Now, While cattle stations across the Northern Territory are taking the warmer weather as a chance to slow down on the cattle work and do some other infrastructure projects, the Northern Territory Cattlemen's Association are prepping for a big 2026. I caught up with NTCA CEO Romy Carey to reflect on the year that was and also to look ahead and ask about some of the things that's currently making the news in the NT cattle industry.
It was a huge year for us in 2025. It's crazy to think that we're sitting here in 2026 already. I'm not sure where it went in the blink of an eye. Obviously, last year I took over as CEO of the Cattlemen's Association. So we farewelled our previous CEO, Will Evans, and congratulated him into a new role at Cattle Australia. There was certainly plenty on for us in 2025, and we kicked a fair few goals, and we're really looking forward to 2026, and it's welcomed us in with some beautiful rain across lots of the territory. So, yeah, it's all looking up for us.
We'll have a look at 2026 now. It was a pretty big year for a lot of cattle producers in the region. We've seen some pretty good export numbers, good cattle prices. I guess in 2026, what are you hoping to see on that front for the industry, both in export and in local, in Australian industry?
So for us, the country looks amazing at the moment. Cattle prices are good. I think we're set for another strong year in our domestic supply chain and in our live export supply chain as well. So we're looking forward to that.
Look at some news now. China and tariffs have been the big talking point, I think, nationally. I've spoken to a few producers, both in export and both in local production. The consensus to me seems to be this won't affect territory producers too much. What are you hearing from producers?
Yeah, it's been quiet from producers on this front. Certainly, we've seen this happen in China previously, and it's something that I think that our processors are aware of, and it's important that we've got those diversified markets. So there's not been a lot of concern raised directly with me, but it's certainly something that we're watching.
End of last year, you made a trip over to China. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And, you know, did you come out of that trip feeling good considering the news that's just come out?
Yeah, certainly. So the Chinese officials were undertaking this report that we've seen now, which is what's caused their decision. And there wasn't a lot of news or any preempting that I'd heard while I was over there. There was lots of optimism amongst Chinese industry around the potential for live cattle. However, again, as we've just discussed, there's a bit of reluctance and uncertainty around how the decisions are made at points in time. So that diversification has continued to be the top of the discussions there.
Are you concerned, or do you think that this may make committing to further dealings and further business with China for territory cattle producers potentially unviable or less attractive?
I think it's all about that commercial risk profile. You know, there are going to be people and businesses who are wanting to enter into that market, and that's a decision for them to make commercially.
We'll turn now to Bufflegrass. The consultation period, the Have Your Say period, is still on for the Bufflegrass Weed Management Plan. This has been a pretty extended process. How are you feeling about the current consultation period, and what have you been talking to about with producers?
So the consultation period has been extended. So it came out just before Christmas, and we've still got plenty of time to get consultation and submissions in. We're going to work extensively with our members to make sure that all of our feedback is collated and submitted to that draft plan that the minister's put out. I guess probably for the listeners, it's just really important that everybody takes the time while the Have Your Say is open to get their thoughts down on paper and get them into the minister.
We'll talk about the specifics of the plan. One might say you can consider it's potentially lenient or potentially doesn't impose that many restrictions at all on cattle producers on the use and the spread of buffalo seed. What are your thoughts on those specifics? And are you happy, I guess, with the plan that's been put forward?
So we certainly have been committed to this process. Like you mentioned, it's been a long process, and the Weed Advisory Committee have worked really hard to try and provide the minister with some level of draft plan with regards to the importation and spread of buffalo seed. For us as an industry, it's a critical tool for us to manage our erosion, manage our dust suppression, and importantly keep a base feed for our cattle, especially in the southern parts of the Northern Territory. So for us, we're looking for a weed management plan that doesn't impose restrictions on our day-to-day uses for buffalo grass.
There's a couple of very exciting things happening over the next couple of months with the NTCA. Got a couple of big events coming up.
Absolutely. We have our conference coming up, which we'll be hosting in Darwin at the waterfront in March. Very exciting times for us. Before we kick along to that, we'll do a round of branch meetings through the regions and we'll conduct our branch AGMs. So it's all stations go here.
That was NTCA CEO Romy Carey.
Don't fight the static. Hear ABC local radio crystal clear on the ABC Listen app. Download now.
Now, we'll be checking in with the Bureau of Meteorology just after the hour. But one thing Territorians don't need to be told right now is that it's hot out there. And it's only getting hotter as we get further into summer and the wet season. But of course, the work on the farm doesn't just stop because it's hot. And that led our reporter, Fiona Broom, to ask some really important questions about what the colour of your wee says about you.
It's barely 9 o'clock in the morning, you've already been hard at work for a few hours, and you're drenched in sweat. This time of year, it can feel impossible to cool down or quench your thirst while you're on the job. So what does that say about what's happening in your body?
Well, clearly your body temperature is elevated, and that's what the sweat is all about. Now, going to the toilet and seeing a dark-coloured urine is a sign that your body is low on fluids. It's losing a lot of fluid out of your skin through the sweat.
The Public Health Service Health Direct has produced a handy little chart that ranks the colour of your wee from clear to brown to help answer the question, am I drinking enough water? Occupational heat stress specialist Dr. Matt Brearley says once you find yourself in the yellowish middle of that scale, you're starting to get dehydrated.
Yeah, you're starting to lose substantial fluid, or you're not keeping up with your fluid needs by that point, which can be a real challenge for people working in the field. It may require a large fluid consumption, which is sometimes hard because lack of availability, or you're just not used to drinking that much. So it can be a real challenge doing physical work in our conditions.
Is hydration just about drinking water? It might be a bit of a silly question, but does drinking water, is that enough to stay hydrated?
Generally, yes. I mean, food is critical for heat stress management. There's something that's not well recognised both in workplaces and in the general public. Food provides the fuel to allow us to do our work, and it also contains this thing called electrolytes. Now, most people have heard about electrolytes from sports drink companies or companies that are trying to market a certain drink mix to you. They tell us they have lots of electrolytes and you need them for your hydration. They don't tell us that our food has way more electrolytes.
Is brown wee or a dark yellow coloured wee the only sign that you might be experiencing heat stress, or are there some other signs?
Most people assume that hydration equals heat stress. So if I'm dehydrated, well, I can fix my heat stress by just being hydrated, but it's body temperature. So body temperature is the main issue while working in the heat. Dehydration, in my opinion, is a supplementary or secondary issue. It influences heat stress, but does not determine it.
At this time of year, all across Australia, it is hot. There's sort of no getting around that. If your job requires you to be out in the paddock, out picking fruit or veg, working outdoors in any way, how can you stay on top of heat stress?
So we've got to get rid of this body heat you're producing. I think the key thing to remember is that we are all just like internal combustion engines. We all produce heat. The harder we work, or you could look at it as the harder we rev our engine, the more heat we produce. In cooler weather, this is less of an issue because most of that heat can readily be lost to the environment because it's cool. It might be dry air, and it takes that heat through sweat and through radiation of heat. When it's hot, humid, sunny, etc., that environment doesn't accept as much. So we either have to slow down to produce less heat, or we have to cool the body as a way of getting rid of that body heat. while still being hydrated, because that can help as well, but it's getting rid of the body heat. We need to plan our jobs, which is foreign to most of us. We need to plan our jobs around, how am I going to get rid of this heat I produce? Otherwise, I'm going to deal with heat stress.
Is there a demographic within the agricultural industries who are more at risk of heat stress because they either won't or don't know how to manage heat stress?
I think the resiliency of the workforce and the fact that we generally won't put our hand up no matter how hard the conditions are, how hot we are, that resiliency is something that I think is amazing, but also see it as detrimental in heat stress management. So if we are not willing to put a hand up, I'd say the whole industry is at elevated risk.
What are your top tips for dealing with the heat?
So it's body temperature, body temperature, body temperature. It's this the key, and we don't talk enough about it, because most people go straight to dehydration as the cause and the remedy to heat stress. We do better work when we're cool. We're more efficient at it. I think that's the big change for the ag industry, in my opinion.
That's Dr. Matt Brearley. He's a managing director at Heat Stress Consultancy, Thermal Hyperperformance. You're speaking with Fiona Broom. It's time to have a look at the weather. I've got the one and only Sally Cutter here with me today from the Bureau of Meteorology. Good afternoon, Sally.
Good afternoon.
I want to start over in the Central Arnhem Plateau today. We've got some pretty big rainfall numbers over there the past 24 hours.
Oh, yeah, and it's still raining. We've got a good band of storms just sort of near Catherine and extending northwards. So that's producing a fair bit of rain there. But if you're looking at the 24 hours to 9 a.m, Central Arnhem Plateau had 157.4, which we're starting to look in record territory for that. So that's a record for January. And the previous was set back in 2008, and it's the highest since December in 2008.
Record numbers, and I heard it came down pretty quickly as well.
Oh, yeah. We had 98 millimetres in an hour.
Wow.
Between about 6.30, starting about 6.30 last night. Yeah, it was way above sort of the 1% exceedance, and that's why, if anybody saw the warnings, they were talking about intense rainfall. So it was certainly really, really heavy rainfall. And they have actually had some more.
Yeah, just for that region, can they expect much more?
Well, we are seeing some bands of still hanging around that way, and we've got that one lined up near Catherine. The whole Arnhem district, we're just going to see sort of the continuation. We might see a few showers and storms also extending into the Daly district, but we've had another, I think it's about 18, oh, another 23 millimetres at Central Plateau, but Yorelba Ridge has had 58 millimetres. So there's some good rain under that band. So if anybody is out there, just be aware that we are going to see those rivers coming up a bit, and particularly as we've still got to wait for all that water that fell down up at Central Arnhem to work its way down the river as well.
Mm. And the Darwin, Palmerston, and particularly the rural area didn't miss out either. What's their past 24 hours look like?
Oh, yeah, we've had a fair bit of a few showers and storms coming through, certainly not up in those big totals. The heavier rain was a couple of days back. So yesterday was relatively quiet. Noonamars had 24 millimetres. You have to go a fair way down the list, 11 miles, and Nuckers Lagoon, 10.6. So there hasn't been those really big totals. Darwin Airport, 6.2. So we haven't seen those massive rainfall totals that we saw a couple of days back when that line just sat over Darwin. But we are certainly still seeing those showers and storms working their way through.
Down in Central Australia, the temperatures are looking very, very high right now, to put it mildly. Yeah. Is that still going on throughout today?
Yeah, and we also do have that heat wave warning. So if anybody is out and about or thinking of being out and about, we do have a severe heat wave warning for the Gregory, Simpson, Leicester and Tanami district. So it just means that we've got unusually hot temperatures both day and night. So your body's not recovering overnight and from those really high temperatures during the day. But we're looking at 42 for today and tomorrow in Alice Springs, minimum 25 tonight, It does drop down a little bit on Sunday because we do have a change coming through, a southeasterly change, so it's going to get quite windy. But it's not going. It is going to drop the temperature. That's 5 degrees, but it's going to be very hot and almost very hot. So,
for the weekend ahead, Sally, what can Territorians expect?
Okay, for the weekend, windy down south. We've got those southeasterly winds coming in, and that's going to increase those fire dangers. And it's still going to be very hot. We're not seeing hot to very hot. We're not seeing that much of a temperature drop associated with that wind change coming through. We'll see things warming up a little bit through the Gregory. We've still got those showers and storms in the north, but it really depends on what that low off the Queensland coast does. If it doesn't come too far west, we're going to see some drier air brought up. Unfortunately, not so much where us humans are over the top end, but higher up in the atmosphere. So we're going to see those temperatures to maybe creep up a little bit and the showers and storms decrease, but it really depends exactly what that does. But generally, we're going to see those showers and storms continuing, particularly Saturday, because we're not going to see any easing until potentially early next Sunday or probably more likely early next week.
Sally, thanks for joining us today on the Country Hour. Hope you have a great weekend.
Will do. Thanks very much.
That was Sally Cutter there from the Bureau of Meteorology.
Wherever you go, ABC Local Radio goes too. Grab the ABC Listen app now. No ads, no subscription, no worries.
We'll stick with the weather a little bit longer. Down south, we're seeing the starts of some pretty big bushfires down there, and it's been quite hot across central Australia as well. Somewhere in central Australia right now where it's pretty warm is Laminus Station, just south of the NTSA border. Temperatures there expected to reach 45 degrees today. Now, that's pretty hot, but for Gillian Fennell, a pastoralist at Laminus Station, that's a pretty typical summer's day.
It's not, well, like, it's hot, obviously, if you're not used to it, but for us it is just a summer's day. We find it quite amusing, actually, that we get these extreme heatwave warnings and all those sorts of things, and I understand it's to make sure that vulnerable people and visitors to the region don't do something stupid like wander off into the countryside with no hat and water bottle and those sorts of things. But for us it's just part and parcel of living and working here, and we just shape our day accordingly and get on with the job. So, yeah.
What does work and living there look like during those very hot days? It's 45 degrees right now, I'm seeing on the forecast for Marla. What does work and life look like in that sort of heat and conditions?
Well, because we've got the cattle and obviously we need to make sure that they have access to water throughout all this really hot weather to make sure nothing's broken down. There's a lot of driving around in our modern air-conditioned vehicle checking things. So you are still being productive. You are looking after the livestock. And if we've done our boars runs and we've done all that sort of stuff, then there's a lot of stuff in the workshop where we have a large misting fan, so you can still continue to do your stuff in the workshop in the shade. It's the temperature's nice. And then we knock off, you know, early lunch, 11 or 12, take a break in the house over a few hours in the middle of the day, and then go back to it about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Because of daylight savings, the sun doesn't go down till 9 o'clock, so you've still got nearly a whole day's worth of daylight left after lunchtime. So yeah, we just carry on.
And just quickly, before we let you get back to sweltering in that 45-degree heat, or relaxing in the nice, cool, air-conditioned utes, how are the cattle handling and holding up in this quite hot weather you're getting?
Well, because we run a breeder operation, so our cattle are born and bred here, so they are quite acclimatised to it. It's obviously a concern when you've got lactating cows, if you're feeding little calves, they can tend to suffer a little bit in the hot weather. So that's why it's really important that we keep the feed and the nutrition and water up to them. But, yeah, they spend a lot of time in the shade. And, you know, livestock do have their own things, the way that they do things. For example, I've got two horses in the horse yard out the front of my house at the moment. They have access to a shade and a sprinkler and a hay net down one end of the yard. They're both currently standing out in the baking sun. So you can provide them with everything that you think they need, and then they will still make their own decisions. So, yeah.
You can lead a horse to shade, but you can't make them sit in it, Gillian.
Yeah. Exactly right.
Gillian, thanks for joining us today on the NT Country Hour.
No worries. Thanks very much.
That was Gillian Fennell from Lamina Station. Lamina's about 350 kilometres south of Alice Springs. As we mentioned there, it's expected to reach around 45 degrees today.
G'day, good people. My name's Lee Davis from LD Horsemanship. I'm up here at Tennant Creek at the Juno Centre, just working with the young students in the horse program, trying to help them create better partnership and learn about life in the process. And you're listening to The Country Hour.
Let's head over to WA. And one region known for its cattle has sold its only live cattle loading ramp to its neighbour. Pilbara Ports sold the equipment, which was custom built in 2017, to Kimberley Ports last year for a nominal fee of $1. A dollar! The last cattle vessel to call at Port Hedland was in 2020, but one prominent Northern WA pastoralist says he doesn't understand the point of the sale and thinks the ramps could have been useful in the future. Munda station owner Michael Thompson spoke to Amelia Searson about the sale.
Look, I don't know why they would have sold that. I mean, was it eating grass? No. Was it going to deteriorate? No. I'm not sure. The problem with the Pilbara has been that we've been having a lot of dry runs and people have been forced to drop cow numbers, and, of course, that drops sale numbers going forward. So it hasn't been all beer and Skittles in the last 5 years, I reckon. Maybe over 10 years it's been... We've had a few hiccups along the journey. So to sell something like that, I just don't see the point of it. You know, it was there. If we could ever start stringing years together where we can get some consistency and everyone get some confidence back in the industry, and that would be getting their female numbers back up again, then the port would be handy. It's a cheap option for freight. Trucking cattle to Perth like I have forced to do and a lot of others are forced to do, it's quite expensive compared to Port Hedland. You know, we're looking at, in the old days, 10 cents a kilo to go in through Hedland, and we're looking at 30 to come to Perth. So big difference.
Do you reckon this is the final nail in the coffin, Michael? Or, you know, do you reckon this signifies the end of the live cattle export out of the Pilbara?
Oh, I don't think, you know, live export will continue, but just maybe not out of Port Hedland. Look, Broome's only 600 k's from Munda. You know, I mean, it's not the end of the earth. I mean, it's still a saving. But, you know, Port Hedland, we've, you know, let's face it, you know, iron ore makes a lot of money and the priority is there, of course, and I get it. It makes our country a lot of money, and but so do we, us cattle producers, not to the level of them, of course, but, you know, we're part of the game. I don't think a ship, you know, two or three ships a year was going to break the bank in Port Hedland. But, you know, in all fairness, you know, if we can't supply the cattle, enough cattle out there to fill a ship, what's the point in bringing them in? And I think that's where maybe it has got to. That confidence with the rainfall has dampened everyone's enthusiasm to a certain degree. And I guess this is where we're at today.
Munda station owner Michael Thompson speaking with Amelia Searson. And a Pilbara Ports spokesperson says the Port Hedland cattle run hadn't been used over 5 years, so it was happy to hand over the equipment to the Kimberley Ports operation in Broome. The spokesperson says the export of live cattle out of the Pilbara would need a privately licensed quarantine staging yard, which is no longer operational in Port Hedland. $1. That's all a cattle loading ramp cost the Kimberley Ports. So for a song, let's play Last Dollar, Fly Away by Tim McGraw. Tim, that last dollar could have got you a cattle loading ramp.
2, 3, like a bird I see.
That was Last Dollar, Fly Away by Tim McGraw.
Hi, I'm Nigel McGrath. I'm Sanctuary Manager at Wongalara Wildlife Sanctuary for Australian Wildlife Conservancy, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
Welcome back, if you're just joining in with us, to the Northern Territory Country Hour. My name's Charles Geary. The time is 22 minutes past one. Kind of a very relaxing sting there for a Friday afternoon. Now, rain in the Barkly region has cut off Mylinger, a community just off the Stuart Highway, 25 kilometres north of Elliot. Now, it's also isolated the cattle station Newcastle Waters. It's been like this for a few weeks now, and it's only now just become passable with a high-clearance four-wheel drive. Newcastle Water Station has been helping ferry people back and forth from Mullinger with a tinny. Andrew Cochrane is the manager of Newcastle Water Station. He spoke to ABC Alice Springs' Stuart Brash earlier today.
Been sort of cut off for 2 weeks now, which as Ray said, it's not an uncommon occurrence. And we just run the barge twice a day for both our own staff and the local community for getting to and from Stuart Highway.
And the water is dropping now. Can you get across in a standard, and let's say a Tojo at the moment?
It's open to high clearance vehicles now. But the sort of sedans and that still can't cross. But the high clearance vehicles, it's open to now. But it's sort of our biggest concern now is the flood damage after the water fully recedes. We've had a lot of trouble in previous years getting the urgent flood damage fixed. We've been in contact with all levels of government. Yes, there's some great ideas around for big infrastructure plans to solve the problem long term, but it's the immediate flood damage that we need to act quickly on now.
Now, what impact does it have on business? I mean, obviously getting people to and fro during the wet season is one thing, but when you're trying to muster and get trucks out of there, does this have any impact?
Yes, definitely has impact. Half our operations is based on the western side of Newcastle Creek, so we need to be able to get heavy transports in and out, both supplies and feedstocks in, and then our finished product, our cattle out at the end of the day.
Can you put a sort of monetary cost in terms of the problems the creek causes you?
Oh, it's probably hard to put a complete number on it because, now where you're sort of, because of the standard of that road, we now base our operations around not having to use that as much. So, if it was available, we could definitely, employ more people and increase our productivity if it was crossable with heavy vehicles this time of year.
As Ray,
at the moment, it's not.
As Ray Dixon said, this is not something new, but what is the solution? Is there a solution to actually making sure Newcastle Creek doesn't cause this level of problem in the future?
Oh, I think as I touched on earlier there's the big grand plans of big infrastructure projects, raising and more culverts, etc., to get the road to a higher level, to be more flood resilient. But just for the moment, our biggest frustration, as I said, really is with the flood repair works after when the water recedes.
Now, it's been 2 weeks now. We're only, barely halfway probably through the wet season. What do you expect the rest of the wet to bring?
It's always hard with the cyclones floating around this time of year, because we're so far south from Darwin. Cyclones can bring us a lot of rain, or they can suck the moisture away. So, we're still hoping for a good wet season yet. We traditionally get a lot of, the bulk of our rain in February, March. So there's still a fair bit of wet season to come, which will obviously see the creek rise again.
We've got the Minister for Infrastructure, Bill Yan, with us right now. What would you like to hear from the Minister?
Oh, just, what their plans are in the short term, really. We've heard plenty of their thoughts and that for the long term, but the short term flood repair works is what we really want to hear about.
That was Andrew Cochrane, who is the station manager at Newcastle Waters Station. He was speaking with Stuart Brash. As Brashy mentioned there, he did have Infrastructure Minister Bill Yan on the show that day. Now, he said he understood the desires to get repairs done quickly, but it'll have to happen to wait until the end of the wet season. That was Bill Yan's comments to Stuart Brash. Talking about floods as well, I'm just having a look at the ABC Northwest Queensland Facebook page. They're saying right now that the current stock loss figures for the floods that have been affecting that region, for that's either missing or deceased, is currently at 31,000 head of livestock. Looks like opposition leader Susan Lee and Nationals leader David Littleproud are currently in the region touring. We will return to that next week to see if there's any updated figures coming out of Northwest Queensland.
G'day, Patrick Stack here from ABC Sport Daily. If you love sport,
quite fiery both on and off the court, quite strongly opinionated too is Nick Kyrgios.
And great conversation.
I think really the weather gods were ruling the roost at the Gabba.
Then you'll love ABC Sport Daily.
If he continues to put the ball in the bucket the way he is, someone in the NBA is going to make a move after him. I can guarantee you that.
ABC Sport Daily, weekdays from 6:30 on ABC Local Radio.
We've got some resources news to end off the show today. Two big mining companies with operations in the territory are working on a merger to create a mega miner. Country Hour executive producer Tom Robertson was with me in the studio this afternoon to explain what's happening. Now, how did the story start today?
Thanks, Charles. Yeah, so the companies are Rio Tinto and Glencore. Listeners will know Rio Tinto have their operations over in Gove, and Glencore operate the MacArthur River lead and zinc mine near Borroloola. There'd been some media speculation that Glencore and Rio Tinto were keen on a merger, and they put out a statement today confirming that they're working on that, bringing the two companies together because they have a common interest in copper mining. It would create like this mega miner, is what they're calling it in the media, worth $207 billion. The expectation is if it went ahead, Rio Tinto would essentially acquire Glencore by the way of a court-sanctioned scheme of arrangement, according to the companies.
$207 billion. Tom, how likely is this to go through at this stage?
It's interesting. Not 100% sure yet, but it's not like a lock, essentially. Rio Tinto shares fell more than 6% so today. So the investors aren't keen on it necessarily, is what the initial look would be.
It's not a great sign.
Not a great start. And some analysts are saying Rio would probably not be keen on things like Glencore's coal assets in other states because Rio sold all of theirs in 2018. So they've got until under the UK's laws, which is where Rio Tinto is based. They're an Anglo-Australian miner. They have until like February to make a decision. So, I mean, it could be locked in later today or they could wait till Feb. You'll just have to wait and see.
Thank you, Tom, for joining us and giving us that update on a potential mega miner and the potential merger between Glencore and Rio Tinto. Just a reminder that Rio has those Gove operations located on the Gove Peninsula in northeast Arnhem Land. And Glencore has the MacArthur River lead and zinc mine near Borroloola. And I think that's all we've got time for today on the Country Hour. Thanks for joining me this week. It's been great to have you with us. We'll be back with you next week with plenty of exciting territory rural news and primary industry news. In the meantime, you can always listen back on the ABC Listen app or check out our ABC Rural website as well. I'm Charles Geary. Enjoy your weekend.